Dear Persisters, before we start today's episode, we would like to make two brief announcements. First of all, we are now part of a campaign called Two Pods a Day. It's a campaign that introduces you to two independent podcasts every day. You know, everyone listens to the big names in the podcast world, but you know what? There are so many great independent podcasts that also deserve to be listened to and that also deserve some love. So please head over to the homepage, twopodsaday.wordpress.com, to check out all the amazing podcasts that they introduce. Also join the Facebook group, hashtag twopodsaday, and follow them on Twitter. The handle is @twopodsaday. Secondly, we're excited to announce that we are now featured on an awesome app called Castbox. It's an app that you can use to listen to your podcasts for free, and it's available on both Android and iOS. And the great thing is that it's a free platform that also helps promote podcasters to millions of listeners worldwide. So make sure you check them out. Now on to the show.
She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
Hello, dear nasty people, and welcome to The Persistence. This is She Who Persisted, the nasty podcast. Today, we're continuing our series of minisodes as follow-up discussions to our podcast about pregnancy. On the podcast today are Heather, Beatrice, and myself, Elizabeth. Our topic today is pregnancy in the public sphere, and primarily how pregnant bodies are often conceived of as public space. In the context of this, we want to talk about personal experiences, political discussions of women's bodies, and about feminist critiques which focus on the pregnant body as a public good, namely Margaret Atwood's novel, The Handmaid's Tale. But before we get into that, we have a little bit of housekeeping.
Yeah, I just wanted to... This is Beatrice here, by the way. Hi. I just wanted to say one tiny thing before we actually start the episode, which is we decided to do, as we said, a series of minisodes about different aspects of pregnancy and childbirth and motherhood. But there's one thing we cannot really talk about because we are cisgender women, and that is trans people who are pregnant, or pregnancy of trans people, or you know, trans parents. And it's something that I find really interesting, and I would really, so if the thing is, if any of your listeners have experience with that or want to say something about it, then please drop us a line. You can write us an email or drop us a line on Facebook or join the Facebook discussion group, because we would be really interested in the topic. What I think is especially interesting is we are a society in which motherhood is and pregnancy is closely connected to the idea of femininity. We've already talked about how childless women are very often perceived as being less of a woman than women who are mothers. And so because of this close connection of motherhood and femininity, I would really like to know what it does to people's gender identity who don't identify as women and are pregnant. So what does it mean to be a pregnant man? And what does it mean to be a male mother, in a sense, you know, somebody who gives birth but is not a woman? What does it do to your gender identity? What does it do to your the relationship to your body? You know, I really would like to know that, and I would really love if someone has personal experience with that to just let us know about it. We would really appreciate that, because it's something we cannot really address here, unfortunately, because we don't have that experience ourselves and we don't want to speak for somebody else, obviously. So
absolutely, that's a great point.
Please tell us.
Yeah, what's our email again?
Our email is shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com. And we also have a Facebook page, She Who Persisted, obviously. And also a Facebook group that you can join where you can also discuss things with us or just share your own experiences. Yeah, and you can also, of course, write us a message on Facebook. I think those are the easiest ways of getting in touch with us. Yeah.
Yes, please do that. Please get in touch.
So let's talk about our own personal experiences. I have never been pregnant, but I have this sense from friends of mine who have been pregnant that their bodies are kind of a public good. People feel like they have the ability to touch them, talk to them about their pregnancies, give them advice and information about what they should and should not be doing when they're pregnant, as though they no longer have an identity for themselves. And Heather, since you have been pregnant, maybe you can talk to us a little bit about your experiences being pregnant in public, in a society where people think that it's okay to tell you what to do when you're pregnant.
Yeah, it's a joy, really. It's wonderful. luckily, I have not had too many experiences with strangers coming up and grabbing my belly. The first time I was pregnant, I probably just would have been shocked and stunned, but after my second and third pregnancy, I think I might have actually smacked someone had they tried to touch me. But I think it was my first pregnancy, my nephew, who was a teenager at the time, came up and grabbed my belly.
Oh, God.
Because he had asked if my daughter was kicking. And I said, well, you know, sometimes, but usually not whenever you're wanting her to. I mean, she can't do it on command. And he just grabbed my stomach. And my mother-in-law saw him do that, and immediately, before I could even respond, she's like, get your hands off of her.
Oh, that's good.
Do you touch her? Yeah, she's like, do you touch her any other time? Always ask.
Oh, that's good.
And,
way to go. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was much appreciated. So he, of course, removed his hands from my stomach. Not, the baby wasn't kicking. There wasn't anything to feel anyway. But the only other person really that ever touched my stomach was my youngest sister-in-law, but she would always do so after asking. Mm. And, you know, is the baby kicking? Let me know if she's kicking or he, and then she might touch my belly. But in general, you know, people aren't coming up and grabbing your stomach on a regular basis normally, so I don't know what this whole idea is that now that you have an extra person inside of you or persons, that you can just grab someone. It baffles me, and it's extremely uncomfortable.
Hmm.
Because unless you're already, I guess you've already, I mean, maybe somebody would be forward enough with their first pregnancy, but unless you've already experienced it once and know that you don't like it, you're just kind of caught off guard, and you just stand there frozen, when really you should probably be smacking someone to the ground. Yeah. Get off of my belly. but in regard to someone speaking to you about how you look, there might be comments about, especially in subsequent pregnancies, you start to show sooner. So I got a lot of, after being pregnant, particularly with my third child, being only a couple months along and being bigger because my muscles were already weak, I guess you could say. And they would say, oh, wow, I can't believe you're already showing so much. You know, are you making sure that you're not, you know, you don't have to really eat for two.
Ugh.
Comments like that,
oh,
right?
Shut up.
but it gets tricky. If it's a stranger, you can kind of dismiss it. If it's someone that you know that might say something along the lines of when you're about 6 months along and say, wow, you look like you could pop any day.
That's also such a nice phrase.
That,
oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, that makes you, one, it made me feel horrible.
Yeah.
Like my dad, who I love dearly, Thanksgiving, when I was pregnant with my son, he wasn't due until February. So Thanksgiving in November,
mm-hmm.
he was like, wow, you look like you're due any day. And I'm like, Dad, you can't say that to me.
Yeah.
One, I already feel bad. Two, I mean, I feel miserable because I was big, but I wasn't eating any more than normal. I was just big.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I'm like, you can't comment on that, Dad, because you're supposed to be my safe space,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
well, not only that, but like we shouldn't be commenting on women's bodies generally, but certainly not if you think someone is pregnant or you're talking about whether they might be pregnant. My father-in-law saw, I think she was a waitress at a restaurant we were at, and he said, so when are you due? The woman was
oh,
not
no.
pregnant.
No. That's the worst.
But somehow being pregnant gives you the ability, or gives people like the ability, to feel like they can comment on it, even if you aren't actually pregnant.
Yes. And they also then, if it's a woman in particular, will want to try to relate to you their experiences. So, and that comes with, you know, want a pregnant belly, because they always want to tell you how their pregnancy went or what they went through or whatever, even if you don't ask for it. But I've noticed that even after having my children, that people feel like they can comment on my children. So, for instance, my son has longer hair. We have not cut his hair for a multitude of reasons, none of which anybody really needs to have an explanation for. Right. He has longer hair. We can pull it back in a ponytail, and it looks sweet, okay? It looks awesome, and he loves it. But
he has a baby man bun.
And be a little hipster.
He can pull it off. And it looks awesome, but he, you know, I'll take him to the grocery store, and I had an elderly woman come up to me while we were at the deli and say, "Oh, she's so pretty." And I say, "Well, that's my son." Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Oh, well, he needs a haircut."
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And then she, to try to like act as if what she said wasn't really uncalled for, then she tries to tell me a sweet story about how she kept locks of her children's first haircuts. And she still has them, and she labeled the bag and all of that. I'm like, well, that's a really great idea when we cut his hair. I mean, he's not going to be Rapunzel someday, but the fact that she felt the need to say that.
Yeah.
The idea of keeping your children's hair and teeth in a box in your closet is super creepy to me.
Have you seen the ad on Facebook of, it's shaped like a mouth, a box is shaped like a mouth, and you open it. There's a place for all of the teeth, and in the center, there's a place for the umbilical cord if you kept the umbilical cord.
No. Mm-hmm. First of all, thank God for my ad blocker on Facebook. Secondly, thank God I ate strawberries with chocolate before this episode for my nerves, because I knew this is going to be awful. Thank you, Heather.
But so yeah, it's not just your pregnant body. It's actually your children as well after you have already given birth.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of comments. And, you know, in pregnancy, if you're waddling more, of course, you're going to waddle as you get larger. But when you waddle more, then there's going to be comments about, you know, if you're uncomfortable, here are the magic cures that I had. Or you're making sure that you sleep with a pillow between your legs, right? And I feel like, sometimes, depending on who it is that's saying it, I'm sure that they mean it out of the kindness of their heart, but it's still the same thing of, I normally on a daily basis, I'm not asking my friends, hey, are you sleeping okay at night? Here's what you should do. You should make sure that you lay in a supine position, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just not something that's typical, so I'm not sure why, because I'm pregnant, all of a sudden all of this information is coming my way when I'm not asking about it. I mean, we should talk about things, but talk about them when we need to talk about them, not give me unsolicited advice.
In German, we have that saying, which is gut gemeint ist das Gegenteil von gut, which means if you mean something well, that's the opposite of good.
Oh, right.
So
yeah, like good intentions are the opposite of actual good actions.
Exactly, yeah. So that's probably a better way to see. We have a Germanist here, thank God. Thank you, Elizabeth. So that's probably the most appropriate translation for it, and I think that fits very well with what you've just said.
Yes. Oh, and another comment that has happened a lot from even well-meaning friends, I guess, is commenting on the increase in breast size.
Oh God.
Like, oh, you have nursing breasts now. That's so awesome. Or
as in,
you know, whatever.
You mean like as in your body is now more sexual, or you know, that kind of thing?
I have no idea. I have no idea is meant by it. Just maybe, oh, you have bigger boobs now. Congratulations. Oh. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, listen,
until
if I eat enough chocolate, then I also have bigger boobs, and nobody congratulates me on that.
Right. See, okay, so the one of my friends years ago, it was after my first daughter was born, they wanted to go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not been away from her yet, and she was nursing pretty regularly. And I tried to tell them I can only be gone a few hours, or I'm going to be in a lot of pain, or I'm going to have to pump or something. And they didn't understand, but we went to the movies, we went to eat, and then I'm like, I have to go home now. And they didn't know why, and I'm like, okay, fine. If you have to know, touch my breast right now. Feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I'm like, just poke me. And it was hard as a rock.
Oh, God.
Okay?
Yeah.
I'm like, I have to go nurse my child or pump right now. You don't understand. I am in pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there was comments about, wow, you look more voluptuous or whatever can be said easily, but then you're not even thinking about other things behind it. No.
Yeah, because
I may look extra perky right now, but yeah. I am in a lot of pain.
And again, this ties in with what we said in our last regular episode about pregnant bodies, is that no matter what you feel like as a woman, no matter how you feel like in your body, the most important thing seems to be what your body looks like.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Heather, I'm wondering if there was any discussion of this in the survey you did. I don't know if women talked about it at all, you know, how people perceive them or their public, you know,
can I just say one thing?
Sure.
Because some listeners may not know this. You should listen to episode 3 before you listen to this, because the survey we are referring to is a survey that Heather did with a couple of mothers who were talking about pregnancy and childbirth and so on and so forth. And we talk about this more, or Heather talks about this more in the last regular episode, to go this before, yes, before our discussion here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And eventually there will be a blog post about it. There were about 80 women that responded, and no, I did not ask them this particular type of question. The most that I asked that would be similar to this was about whether you felt you had support.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you could speak to other women about pregnancy.
Gotcha.
And that was actually a mixed reaction. Some were of course, and others were saying no. Some found more solace if they could speak to someone anonymously online than talking to someone in person. So,
oh, that's interesting.
But yeah. Oh, and one more thing that before I forget, because it just popped in mind, was a friend of mine who is now a mother, and I'm sure completely would never say this now, but after having my first child, she was not going to have a baby at that time in her life. She said it wasn't happening. She came over to visit after my first child. It was like within just a few days of being home. And as, I don't know if it was when she was coming in or when she was leaving, she said to me, "So when do you not look pregnant anymore?" Which I know she didn't mean maliciously, and I'm sure it was just out of curiosity, but my heart just broke.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was another one of those things that nobody really talks to you about, that you're still going to look pregnant. You're not going to look 9 months pregnant, but you're still going to look pregnant when you leave. And I thought I was wearing a shirt that kind of covered it, but apparently it didn't. And she said that, and I'm positive that now, if somebody had asked her that when she came home, she probably would have punched them in the face, you know, but it was just something she wasn't even thinking about at the time. It was, mm-hmm, I'm sure, an innocent question, but still a heartbreaking one for me.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Because, again, back to image is everything. And even though I was just a week postpartum, in my head, for some messed up reason, I was thinking, I should look better than this. I shouldn't look like I'm 6 months pregnant anymore.
I don't think it's messed up at all. I mean, it's completely understandable that you want to, you know, feel beautiful and, I don't know, desirable. And of course, in our society, that means that's a very limited definition of what that means. And it's, I think,
right,
and that definition is completely fucked up. But I think your desire to fit in there is not fucked up. I think we all feel like that sometimes, and it's also okay.
Yeah.
But I think we also need to support each other in, you know, you know, feeling that is not the most important part of ourselves and our identity and what we bring to the table as human beings. So,
yeah.
But it's completely understandable, I think. So it's not, I don't think it's fucked up at all.
Oh, well, thank
and I
you.
Think,
you're welcome.
And I think some of this is also like, some of this is also society's like idea of what a pregnant body and a pregnant woman should be like. And some,
right,
of that comes in the political sphere as well, you know, regulating women's bodies in politics, in the public sphere, in public spaces, including newspapers and magazines and whatever, we have an idea of what a pregnant body should be like and how a pregnant body should be treated.
Yeah.
And I think that even in politics, you know, the people who decide how a pregnant body should be treated and whether it should be a pre-existing condition or that pregnancy is a disability, so you go out on short-term disability when you get pregnant, the people who are deciding that are not necessarily people who have ever been pregnant or who will ever be pregnant.
No, and we all...
Correct. Mostly not.
Yeah, and not we probably all saw this picture of Trump's cabinet deciding on healthcare, which will largely affect women, and mostly affect women, and there were all these, like, white men in suits around this table. You probably all saw it on Facebook or somewhere. That picture with all those white men in suits and like signing the healthcare bill, like this.
And they were so pleased with themselves after they joked behind closed doors about, yeah, I don't want to miss a mammogram someday. Ha ha ha. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
breathe, center, focus. Yeah,
blood pressure, blood pressure. One thing that I thought about in connection to this whole idea of female bodies being public sphere, and especially pregnant female bodies being just kind of a public good in a way, was something that the Virginia State Senator Steve Martin, and yes, that is his real name, and I'm not talking about the funny Steve Martin, I'm talking about the misogynistic Steve Martin.
Ooh.
Something he said earlier this year when he said that pregnant women, that a pregnant woman is just, and I quote, host, unquote, for the fetus. So he was... it's quite impressive. So he was defending his anti-abortion stance, and he wrote, I quote, however, once a child does exist in your womb, I'm not going to assume a right to kill it. Just because the child's host, some refer to them as mothers, doesn't want it, unquote.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I think this really emphasizes and brings to an extreme what we talked about in our last, in our pregnant bodies episode and also kind of touched upon today, which is the mother is completely negated as a person. She only has the function of bringing new life onto this planet, or even in this case, I think it's not just to do with bringing new life onto this planet, but also kind of birthing, metaphorically kind of birthing a new generation for the state, in a sense. So she's kind of portrayed as an empty vessel here and as a vehicle for a baby and not as a person herself. And her body is constructed as public property. And that public can also decide what she is allowed to do with their body precisely because it's not hers, right? And that also ties in with...
so disgusting.
Yeah, and that also ties in with, you know, so-called pro-life, although it's nothing to do with pro-life, it's more anti-abortion politics that also basically say, well, you know, your body doesn't belong to you anymore because there's another being growing inside of it, another human growing inside of it, so... we can basically take your right away to decide what happens with the body.
Well, and we talked about this in both of the both the tocophobia episode, minisode, and the main one, that like the baby is what takes precedent. The mother is oftentimes, you know, doesn't get the care that she needs.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think there's even more to this idea to the female body as public space, and I'm still in the process of thinking about this, so this is really like a very incomplete thought in a way. But I was also thinking about, it's just something that came to my mind over and over again when I thought about this topic, is that even like in war and in like political conflict, very often female bodies are kind of violated, you know, in order to violate a country. So, you know, in the... you know, in the case of war rape, for example, which very often is a strategy in conflict, right?
Yes.
And the idea behind this is also that, you know, you kind of, by violating the women, you violate the country, because their bodies are kind of a metaphor for prosperity and also kind of the vessels that produce kind of the future of the country in a sense. You know what I mean? So I think that also kind of ties in with that. I, you know, as I said, I haven't fully thought this through, but I think, you know, this kind of fits into that too.
Yeah, my husband wrote his dissertation on sexuality in the military, mm-hmm. kind of at the beginning of the U.S. Empire, starting with the Spanish-American War, and you definitely see that there. You see it with the Russian soldiers post-World War II in Germany. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is it also has the effect of trying to emasculate the men of those countries as well, that they can't protect their women, and we are the ones conquering the women and thereby the men as well.
And also their women, so they are property.
Yes.
They're not people in their own right, but they belong to those men, and we kind of take that away from them.
Yes. Which is, again, the idea of like the public state there.
Yeah. It's like, again, it's a public body in a sense.
Yeah, that reminds me a little bit of my master's thesis with the Bacchic cult. Part of the reason that they were so upset with people who followed Bacchus, supposedly, their excuse was, one, there were a lot of women doing things, but
there were a lot of women men doing things were that's bad.
Doing things that they women. Shouldn't be doing, yes. But then the men supposedly were allowing themselves to be violated and thereby becoming effeminate. And that was a direct threat to the Roman military because you can't have a bunch of effeminate soldiers running around. They can't defend us properly. So that was one of the excuses they used when they went ahead and imprisoned and slaughtered 7,000 people, according to Livy, in 186 BCE. So, shout out to history.
To history as a whole.
History this would actually be a good transition into the feminist dystopia of women, pregnant women, as public good in Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. If our listeners haven't read it, you should absolutely read it. You should also see their film. It's like a 70s, 80s film.
Oh, and I didn't know that. Just made, there's a film.
Oh, yeah, there's a film. It was actually filmed. There's a scene at the end where all of the handmaids, I'm going to spoiler this for people, are tearing apart a male rapist. And it is filmed on the steps of Duke Chapel. Duke University's Chapel. Nice. So that's fun.
Yeah.
But there's also a miniseries by Hulu. Hulu has made a miniseries, which is also very good, and it's not done yet. So if you've got Hulu, it's really great. The Handmaid's Tale was written in 85. So it's a dystopian novel by Canadian author Margaret Atwood, set in like near future New England. Basically, Boston is the city that they're in. And it's a totalitarian theocracy that has overthrown the United States government. The novel explores themes of women in subjugation and the various means by which they gain kind of individualism and independence, like how you can subvert these systems of power when you have no power, and how to reclaim that power. But I think it's important to bring this up in the context of our episode on kind of pregnant bodies in the public sphere, because of the way that handmaids take over the role of procreation for an entire society, and therefore their bodies become a public good. And basically what's happened is the environment is collapsing. A lot of people have gone sterile, and the only way that we can, you know, ensure the future of society is to find the women who are not sterile and force them into a role for these wealthy families of having their children.
Right.
So you have these handmaids who live with these wealthy families. The wives are complicit in this. The husbands no longer have sex with their wives. They only have sex with the handmaids. And it's in a very kind of ritualized, very steeped in religion kind of way. The story is told in the first person by a woman called Offred, literally of Fred. Fred is the man who owns her, essentially. She is of Fred. And she is... she's there to help protect society and to procreate. These like breeding class of women exist for the survival of the human race. They are both holy saviors, but also breeding stock, kept like animals, which is a terrifying thought when you think about a society that does not allow women to have control over their own bodies and uses them for procreation.
Yeah, I tried to watch the first episode in preparation of this, and I got, I don't know, probably 3/4 of the way through and felt like I was going to have to break something because it was just so frustrating. She's just stripped of her identity, and because of the situation that the author has put these characters in, they don't have a way out, really, because they don't know who they can speak to that's not a spy, because everything... No, there's too much to lose. They could be killed, right? So if they try to go against the system.
And that's the other thing. Men who either were abortion doctors or priests, because this is like a fundamentalist Christian group that's anti-Catholic, anti-other religious sects, they are murdered as well. So men and women who have gone against this system, including what they refer to as, and I'm going to get this wrong, but gender traitors, people, homosexuals who are not contributing to the procreation of society, they too are killed by society.
Yeah. Yeah. And she, everybody, like you said, she was Offred. So she got stripped of her identity down to her name.
I just want to say for our European listeners, don't be sad. I didn't watch it either because I'm also in Europe and I don't have Hulu. But it will, I bet it's going to be possible to stream it somewhere very soon. So Netflix.
But there is also another film.
Yeah, you can watch the film.
If you want to watch another film version of it, there you go.
Yeah, but you know, everybody keeps talking about the Hulu miniseries, so I want to watch it too. But, you know.
That's true.
But on the plus side, we have public health care, so, you know.
Wow, that was a low blow.
Sorry.
Really low blow, Beatrice.
It's true, though.
Well,
but in the book, though, it goes so far as to trade these women to other countries who are also having population issues and not and haven't had new children in years and years. So these women become not just a public good, but the most important public good.
Mm-hmm. Which some people who are completely backwards may see, where they were putting women up on a very high pedestal.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's a work of dystopian fiction. So
fiction.
It's not real.
Because in real life,
it's not where we're headed, hopefully.
In real life, women have complete control over their bodies and can decide whether to have children or not and when, and it's completely our decision always. So
oh shit, Beatrice.
No. Man. You're just on it today.
I'm so sorry. I'm here to ruin the fun.
Well, the whole talk that you'd mentioned earlier about you know, pro-life not meaning pro-life, meaning anti-abortion, and as far as the government having their hand in the say, and by government I mean old white men having a say in these things. There was a video that I shared on Facebook the other day of a woman who went to her representative's office in North Carolina because she has a 3-year-old daughter who has medication that costs $12,000 a month, and she was saying, you just voted for a healthcare bill that can take that away from her if we don't have insurance to help us. Mm-hmm. And how can you say pro-life? Apparently what you mean is not pro my child who is alive.
Yeah.
Pro for babies in your uteruses.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. They were vessels, like you said. I mean, that feels like how they see us as a vessel to have the baby.
Yeah, so this has been super uplifting.
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole topic of abortion is also something that ties in with this very well, because the reason why abortion is illegal in many places is because women are not regarded as people who should have control over their bodies. And because as soon as, you know, a fetus is growing inside them, others can decide what they should do with it. And I actually, you know, in Austria where I come from, abortion still is not legal. It's still illegal, technically. It is... Really? There is no punishment for it in the first 12 weeks. There is no punishment for it, but it's technically illegal. So that also means that no doctor has to do it. No hospital has to do it. Everybody can say, no, I'm not doing that. And that leads to the horrible circumstance that there are many, many places in my country where women can't get abortions and they have to travel all the way from the Tyrol to, I don't know, Vienna or Graz or somewhere, right, where there is a clinic that actually does it. And just imagine being in that position where you're pregnant and you don't want to be pregnant, which is already horribly stressful. And then you have to travel through the country. You have to pay for the travel. You then also have to pay for the abortion, because it's, of course, due to the fact that it's not a legal procedure. You have to pay for yourself. It's not something that's covered by our public healthcare. And then those women who decide that they cannot, you know, care for a child properly, or that they don't want to have a child, very often also women who actually cannot really afford an abortion, you know. So it's crazy. And I think it's really something, I mean, for me, it's something that I'm so angry about. And every time I talk about it, I get angrier that I'm from a country where abortion is de facto illegal. I think that's just something that's completely insane in 2017.
And do you think that comes from Austria's background as like a Catholic country?
I would say yes. I would say yes, but I think the main reason, and that's also, of course, to do with Austria being, you know, steeped in Catholic. I mean, I would say Catholicism is not an important part of public life in Austria, but sure, I think it's kind of in our cultural DNA, in a sense, if that makes sense. So, and I think one of the things that is, I think, the reason for Austria being so backwards concerning that topic, and also, you know, concerning other topics like marriage equality and stuff like that, is that the conservatives have been in the government since forever, you know, and they kind of veto all of those things. So, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yay.
Oh, Lord. Well, I'm glad to know that things aren't just shitty in the United States.
No. They're not.
Solidarity.
Yay,
right?
Solidarity, yes, sister. We are all fucked.
So maybe on that note.
And on that note, let's end this minisode.
Beatrice, do you want to tell people how they can find us?
No, I don't. Listen, Google it. No, I'm going to tell you. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and now also on Google Play.
Woo!
And you can find us on the interwebs, shewhopersisted.com. You can write us an email at shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com.
And yes, Gmail.
Yes, thank you. And then we are also on Twitter, like everyone. The Twitter handle is @shewhopersistedpod. We're on Facebook as She Who Persisted, the Nasty Podcast. And we also have a discussion group on Facebook, so join that too. And please rate and review and subscribe on iTunes.
Yes.
And you can also rate us on Facebook.
Yay!
If you don't have iTunes.
Please do that.
So I think that's it for today.
Yay.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And stay nasty.
Stay nasty. Bye.
Yes.
Bye.